Welcome to the Sober Shaman Podcast, where we explore ways to make the spiritual practical and apply these medicines to the recovery from addiction and trauma. Thanks for joining me on another episode of the Sober Shaman Podcast. In this episode, I will be going over a theme that I will be revisiting often, and I have, and I'll do it again, and it's this idea of science versus spirit, the head versus the heart, if you will, logic versus love. And it's a push-pull problem is going to be what I'll be focusing on this episode. We'll be going to the trusty yin-yang of it all and looking at the energetics of when things get locked in and when we attach our identity to ideas, when we lean too much in one direction as opposed to the other. And since this is the day after the U.S. presidential elections, you know, of course it can be applied to addictions, but this is thinking. This is our beliefs. So of course it applies to politics, which we're not going to be going into. And of course it applies to business, which we're not going to be going into here, but I will be using these principles, and I do use these principles when I do speaking at business engagements, because this philosophy, these approaches to medicine, these approaches to being human apply to everything, which is why I love them so much. So here we are, science versus spirit, a push-pull problem. And let me start with what drives the head nuts is when science hears, follow your bliss, do what you love, you know, just listen to your heart, live your passion. You know, whether it's science, as somebody who is positioning themselves to be in an argument against this, or whether it's that part of ourself that is ready to cringe when it hears, all you got to do is just follow your bliss, man. Of course, there's going to be cringe factors involved. So the beauty is that this argument that I'm positioning today, science versus spirit, can be two people going at each other, but of course it is also the aspects inside each and every one of us that are going to be attracted to and repulsed by the positioning of one and or the other. We'll get into the idea of balance a little later and why I'm not so crazy about that term either. But those are the statements that drive the science part of us or the science person nuts. Listen to your heart. Follow your bliss, man. Just do what you love. Yeah, the head just puts itself in its hands and just starts shaking and no. Why? Because there's no structure. There's no logical next steps. That is the definition to the head of woo-woo. It's like, what are you talking about? Where's bliss? Show it to me on the map. Show me a compass. I always talk about the Pirates of the Caribbean, right? When Captain Jack Sparrow, one of his most trusted talismans, magical items, was that compass that pointed in the direction of his heart because he didn't know what that was. Boy, could that be a useful tool to people in recovery, people in business, people in life, right? It's like, I don't know what my heart loves. Where's that compass? Point it towards, show it to me. So that's one of the, those are a list of a few phrases that will cause the head to cringe, cause the scientist in all of us to cringe. Yet at the same time, this is what the heart truly wants. It does want to follow its bliss. It does want us to listen to what the heart is calling out, right? So what do we do? And the reaction of the scientist when it hears these calls of the heart is to swing naturally, yin yang, just as far into the other direction to try to clamp things down, to impose structure, to provide a logical course forward. Nothing wrong with that. Now, the problem is when we stay in this rule number one of yin yang, right? Yin and yang are in opposition to each other as opposites. That's rule number one. There's four rules. So when we stay in our Western logical mindset that there are these opposites that must be reconciled or won against each other, this is where we have, endless wars, whether it's internally or externally manifesting. Because to go to politics, right? You have one side winning, and then you wait 4 more years. I'm just gonna bury myself in a hole, and then we're gonna come back 4 years from now, and then we're gonna clobber you. Like, oh man, that's painful. And for a client who is in addiction, that is a perpetuation of the cycle. 101. You can't win by staying in opposition. You can't win as a human by having these parts, science and spirit, continuously just fight each other in opposition. Gonna take a sip of coffee. For those of you watching the video, I'm wearing a long sleeve shirt for the first time here in Chiang Mai, Thailand. We are first day, it's first day of winter in the Chinese calendar, which, speaking with some of the local Thai, it seems to be the same kind of calendar here where there are five seasons. That summer to late summer is the additional season in that Chinese five element calendar and the Chinese traditional calendar. Also, the Thai calendar, as I've learned. November 7th, the first day of winter. And yeah, as you may also notice, I'm in a new place. It's our third place with the same Airbnb landlord. Thank you very much. Love our landlords. They keep bailing us out. They bailed us out literally of the floods about a month ago with that boat rescue. For those of you who read my wife's Substack, Sober Soulful, she gives updates there. I'll leave a link in the show notes if you want to follow along how we're doing. Just taking a breath here because I want to back up and reconcile science versus spirit, the logic versus the heart, the facts versus the woo-woo, as it was professionally, if not implied, outright said to me when I was first getting into very honored positions in the beginning of my acupuncturist career. As a doctor of oriental medicine, I was really blessed to be on staff at Hugh Chatham Memorial Hospital in North Carolina in like 1999. I was literally the first person in there, and and up in Connecticut, I got to do many presentations on staff at what were the name of those hospitals? I forget. Anyway, the point is that coming in as I am going to talk to you about Oriental medicine. I like to say Chinese medicine. The license says Oriental. Times say that is a term of fetishization, so we should say Chinese, which Chinese sounds fine to me. That's basically what I've been studying. Anyway, it comes across to the cardiologist in the room, you know, what is this woo-woo-ness? Here's the thing: science, spirit, energy versus the facts. Those are two different conversations, yet they can be looked at with this same logical mind versus a belief in the invisible. And what I loved and what I found personally was that when I came into these situations with an open mind and an open heart, I was met by the same. And that was in the beginning of my career. And 25 years later, here now, in this situation, I'm still met by a mirroring of the same. Now, throughout those years in between, I was on staff at many addiction treatment centers, and I loved working with people that said, I don't know, what if we did do that? And these were counselors of all types who came in with very specific specialties, very specific models, and MDs after their names, psychiatrists, psychologists, functional MRI people. I don't know. What happens if you did do acupuncture while this person was going through withdrawals and we were taking pictures of their head while I was hypnotizing them? Yes, a wonderful psychiatrist who just started taking up hypnosis in their 70s. Let's see what this is all about. So there is this wonderful personal level, professionalism that we do bring in when we also bring our open mind and open heart to the opposites, the opposing profession. I'm usually on the side of the woo-woo, right? Talking about Chinese medicine and or spirit, it's invisible stuff, but we have very wonderful structures and models in place that make sense to the head, but for the most part, we are the woo-woo. And, you know, I don't need to prove or to argue with the opposing sides of that cardiologist. What am I going to tell them? Beautiful people. I had brain surgeons in some of these sit downs at hospitals and clinics, and I loved the curiosity they brought. One particular instance comes to mind of a neurologist going, there are no neural pathways that do that. So you stuck a needle over there and I felt it over here. And I go, yeah, that's a gallbladder. So there's a gallbladder from my hand to my neck. What are you talking about? It's like, well, it didn't go from your hand to your neck. It crossed over actually from the large intestine. And wonderful, wonderful conversations. And I look forward to the meeting that you have. Maybe share with me of if you've been on the woo-woo side of things, what was it like speaking to an open-minded, open-hearted person more on the scientific side? Or maybe you're a scientist. Please, let's collaborate. There's nothing more I love than continuing and finding new collaborations with open-minded, open-hearted, who are firmly planted with their initials and their licensure in the science end of things and exploring how the meeting places of this yin yang, invisible versus the physical, the science versus the spirit. All right. How's that happen? I said it was a push-pull problem. Let me get to that. Here's the push-pull problem. When we are not open-minded, open-hearted, and we are fixed in our position of polarity as against, we look like this. All of those wonderful statements I said to you at the beginning of this episode's podcast, listening to the heart, following your bliss, do what you love, man. That is firmly entrenched and Buddha touching ground, immovable in the woo-woo sense of it, in that it is allowing the heart to be pulled by what is out there, and the heart is desiring and having an internal analogous resonance for. So, in other words, here's how these two hook up. The heart yearns. And when there is a strong enough external ringing of a bell that says, here, heart, I have a path for you to follow. And bing, there is a resonance, and the heart answers that call. That's what the heart wants. It allows itself to then be pulled by that external calling. So, energetically, it is being pulled. We are being pulled. We are being led by our hearts following this call. All right. That is a very different energetic and a very different feeling than when we are allowing the head, science, facts, and logic to run the show. Because when head, facts, and logic, the HFL, the head football league, when head facts and logic run the show, in this extreme position, right? Because we're going to be in opposition to what the head will now say, what do you mean, heart? You're going to be pulled around by that's the definition of woo-woo. Because you know what you do? You know what you've done to us? As soon as you stop being pulled by that call, You go in 180 degrees the other way and you get called by something else, and you get called and you get called and you get called, and there's no structure. And we run around with our heads, we run around chasing our tails because you just keep following things and never arriving. It sounds like a good idea, but when we listen to you and when we, the head and everybody else involved, allow you, the heart, to run the show, you just pull us in every which way the wind blows direction, and we never arrive anywhere, and you make us nuts. Therefore, the opposing 180 degree opposition to that heart calling is the head imposing severe structure, a logical course of action, a clear path forward of which there is no deviation from. And this can be for somebody in recovery, or what we're seeing somebody in recovery, this can be the white knuckling it, right? And as I've heard a client, more than one client say, but this one particular client calls that following of the heart being consumed, therefore I must impose clear structure. I've heard this said in many ways. When I follow my heart, because, and what other clients have said is because I don't know what my heart really wants, it's dangerous. This is a very common perspective, to allow my heart out of the box, because it's going to pull us into some places that just go right off the ledge. So therefore, I do need to impose this level of discipline, this level of head, this level of logic and scientific fact, so that we can nail down the heart. Oh, how's that statement land with the heart, right? So it does not get us into trouble. And these are the two opposing polarities of extremes when we have science versus spirit, when we do have head versus heart, when we do have just the facts, ma'am, versus follow your bliss, dude. Those are the extremes. So, how do we make that jump to allowing both of these to bring their gifts, yet at the same time offering a softening to each's position and allowing the heart to soften the head, allowing spirit to soften the scientific viewpoint? How do we get there? As I knock over my microphone, how do we get there? And it is about this kind of softening, because in its extreme, I like to say that, all right, and this is probably going to be a whole post in and of itself, probably more than one time it gets brought up, but this is where I've landed lately. Science wants to control, spirit wants to surrender. Why does science want to control? This isn't bad. Science wants to control because it's trying to get a clear outcome. I need to eliminate variables. I'm having a scientific experiment. Therefore, I need to control the field upon which this experiment is conducted. We need to get to an A, B, yes, no conclusion. We need clear outcomes. I can't have all of these different variables thrown into the scientific experiment mid-path. I need to get to the end. I need to know, yes or no, does it work? Doesn't it work? That's that. And in order to do so, I need to impose clear structures that say no to allowing other things to come in. Can't argue with that. That is the only way to get there. A plus B equals C. I need to know. And then, upon arriving at that conclusion, I now have a conclusion that I can now build as a from a fact. It's a fact. I've proven it. So now I can use it in a new experiment. Well, if that's true, what happens when then I, and you know, it's like rungs of a ladder, and it's like, don't mess with my ladder, dude. I gotta climb up this thing based upon the facts that I've already built upon. Makes sense. So that level of control is necessary to get that level of result. Flip side for the heart, that level of surrender, my ego, my will, my desire for the outcome must be surrendered so that something bigger can come in, something bigger than I can imagine. I can't even imagine what the outcome will be. And that's what I'm shooting for. Because when that level of a wave of beauty and love washes over me, that feeling I can't even have planned for. I could have hoped for, but I have no idea what that's going to feel like beforehand. I can't plan this. I can aim towards it and then surrender. And when it happens, I know it's happening because I am overwhelmed by this love, by this beauty, by this surrender. Oh, that's what speaks to my heart. And the only way to get there is to surrender. So these two extremes of controlling for science and surrendering for spirit have their specific results because of the path they take. And when I'm surrendering, I don't want science coming in there and spoiling it with its little ego control of, I want, no, you can't do that. Just like science doesn't want the heart's woo-woo, well, you know, something bigger will come in if you just surrender and allow this experiment. No, then I won't have clear results. I won't know yes or no if you start bringing in more variables. This is very clear. So, how then does the science experiment and the heart's spirit's surrender live together? Well, we're human and we need both. And they need to sit down at the same table and have the same meal at the same time. They may look at it differently. They may explain it differently. Of course, they're going to use different languages to describe the nourishment that is received. But that's the beauty of life, is that we do need these. And I'm not a big fan of the word balance. As those of you who know me know, because it implies that one of these may be too strong, either the head or the two or the heart, and that it needs to be ameliorated, weakened, taken away from, so that the other side can be strengthened. Why I'm not a big fan of that is, first of all, I do agree. Balance is an illusion. It's never going to be achieved. It's a wonderful goal. It's kind of like enlightenment, or, what happens after death? We can shoot for it, but we're never really going to know. We're real never really going to arrive at that place and live there, because that's just not how it works. So I like to strengthen both of those at all times. Strengthening surrender, what the heck does that look like, right? It's easier to see the view of strengthening control. I get that, but what does strengthening surrender look like? It's as simple as this. I like to soften the word surrender to listening. What does listening look like? When I am getting out there to go on, I don't want to say performance, but it is part performance, right? But if I'm going to be giving a talk, if I'm going to be giving a podcast, you may notice I don't follow my notes, because when I've tried to do that, I don't like how I feel, and I don't like how it looks, because it comes across as canned and too structured. Yet if I come across and I don't have a topic and it's too woo-woo, then it's like, well, nobody's going to get anything out of it. I need to listen. So when I do live, I get to listen to the room. I get to listen to the feedback. And that's why I much prefer live over these Zooms. Sorry, listeners and those watching. I wish we were able to be in the same place, and we shall again someday soon, I do hope. But for now, this is how I got to practice my listening. So, what am I listening to? When live, I get to listen to the feedback. I talk about this often, that I survive. I need, my gift is hearing how my clients in one-on-ones and or groups respond to the information I'm presenting, and or in presentations. I want to see how the room is responding to the information I'm presenting. And so listening. How do I listen? How do you listen? How do we learn to listen better? It's not all about the ears, right? How do we listen with our hearts? When I would do body work and palpation, every client that I've ever needled, I've touched. And in individual group sessions, of course, if I've got 30, 50 people in a room, I got to whip around the room. But I still wanted to have some level of conscious proprioception of, I don't want just the needle being the first thing that the client is then feeling entering their body. I always want to have some level of touch on a shoulder, or moving the hair out of the way. It's not just moving the hair out of the way. I'm sending other messages. I'm listening to see how they respond. If I'm moving their hair out of the way, and the person just, oh, what was that? Can you imagine if it was a needle that did that first? That's not the response I want. Okay. If that's how they're responding to my finger brushing their hair out of the way so that I can get a clean shot at the ear, I better say something to this person. I better get to that next level of response from them before I stick this needle in. So maybe I will then say something. Hey, how you doing? Whoa, is this your first time? And then maybe put the padding of my forearm on their shoulder. Maybe put my pinky of my hand on their head to start now bringing in all of these other areas of listening. Psychotherapists have all kinds of tools of how they listen with their words and the techniques that they're using to elicit different kinds of responses. Listening. Yes. So that is what I would say. Surrender sounds like losing to the scientific mind because they are losing their controlled experiment. But if I say listening, it's much easier to bring them into the conversation. And if I'm speaking to a different profession's scientific professional, a professional from a scientific profession, I'm not going to use hard line language like you need to surrender, right? To my woo woo and my invisible energetics, I'm going to say, how are we going to listen? How do you listen? How are we going to listen to these results? Well, these results are going to get spit out on a machine. It's just like, okay. And then what does that mean? What does that mean to you? What will that give us? Oh, I see. All right. So you got a definite yes, no there. Then how do we proceed? What if? And I can propose different ways to bring that conversation into not only the professional, the professional gets to bring their scientific yes, no into more of a what if. At some point, they're going to say, I don't know. Well, that's where you need to come into the conversation. How do you bring something in? And I love this. And backing it into, American politics, boy, it sure would be nice if that was possible, right? I don't think that's going to be the results of the election. How do we now bring you into the conversation in a way so that we can all move forward together? Oh well, it would be nice. I can hope. I'm not going to cast any spells that that's not what's going to happen. Let's just hope that that is exactly what's going to happen. So, this is the push-pull. This is the softening that takes place. And I guess I should say I didn't talk enough about the push aspect of it. So just to clarify that, I talked about the yearning of the heart and the pulling that the heart follows. The pushing is exhausting. When we are too structured, when the head is too much in control, whether it's our own personal life, whether it's our business life, whether we are in a relationship with someone who is maybe unfortunately a superior that is forcing us to follow this path of structure, it feels like we're pushing. We're pushing a rock up a hill. We are pushing. We're going to push a bill through Congress, damn it. Sorry to go back to politics, but that worked so perfectly. It's a force. It's a forcing, which is why the heart is so appealed towards, oh, that's right, I said appealed towards surrender because it's an allowing. It's such a relief to stop pushing the rock up the Sisyphus. trying to make a new word up. Sisyphus, trying to push that rock up the hill to just have it roll back down upon him. In that Greek myth, all the time, one time after the other. That's the cycle of addiction. Boom. That is the definition of it, right? Insanity. Just keep doing it and just keep getting that rock pushed back over us. As opposed to then why we swing 180 degrees the other way and go, screw it. I am going to allow myself to be pulled by and to surrender into maybe old bad habits. Randy, I don't understand why I just keep doing this when I know it's the right thing to do. Well, knowing the right thing to do may be in the camp of pushing the rock up the hill over and over and over. And the heart isn't aligned with what the heart really wants, and it's really going towards heart brokenness, because heart brokenness is still the heart. And allowing surrender into the cycle of addiction, into relapse, is still a form of surrender, just not a healthy one. Just like pushing a rock up a hill that is white knuckling it may be the next right thing to do, but it's not really the next rightest thing to do if we know that that rock is going to get pushed it just up to the tip and rolled right back on us. We need the head. We need the heart. We need reconciliation. We need to apply structure and discipline and do some pushing. The healthy side of that pushing, I like to say, is personal responsibility. So the healthy side of surrender is listening, and the healthy side of control is personal responsibility. I need surrender when it's time to surrender, and surrender to the right things. And I need to take 100% responsibility for all of the things that I need to take 100% responsibility for. And that's just my side of the street. You know what? I can't take responsibility for that. Because when I do, that's me trying to impose more than I should be imposing structure and my will and pushing. No, that's not mine. That's not my rock to push. I can only take care of this. That is the healthy side of science. That is the healthy side of our personal responsibility, of imposed structure, of imposed discipline, of the voice of logic inside us that is not bad or wrong, even by the heart's standards. Just like the head saying, well, you're just a bunch of surrendering woo-woo-ness over there. The heart, personal responsibility, head, help me decide the difference between heart and heart brokenness so that we can follow the right God home. What was that movie? Amsterdam. You're following the wrong God's home. Follow the right God home. What your heart truly desires, not what your heart brokenness is responding to. And this is not balance, but these are the opposing forces that will remain in opposition. Rule number one of yin yang. And rule number two, they will always be in opposition. Therefore, they are two sides of one. Now, whether you see this oneness of yin yang in its totality as a human, because we got a head and we got a heart, and guess what? That might be the longest distance in the universe between those 12, 14 inches between the head and the heart, as they say, right? And live with it. We're going to have to figure out a way, because we know that when we throw too much weight into one side, the head, it gets too imposing and white knuckling it and too disciplinarian and too judgmental. And if we throw it too much into the heart, we get consumed, overwhelmed, or we follow the wrong gods home, or you surrender it into getting woo-woo lostville out there spirits. We need both. Melodoma Somei, one of my spiritual teachers, would say, "This is spiritual technology. Of course, you bring the scientific method into these spiritual rituals. That's why we keep doing the rituals for thousands of years. You know why? Because they work. How is that for science? We know that when you follow these specific guidelines to create ritual in this way, you will receive these results." Knocked over my microphone. There we go. And so, the only reason why that happens then with spiritual ritual is because we've made a clean, clear space for spirit to come in. We surrender. And we've made a structure, a crucible for something bigger than ourselves, completely surrendered to come in. What will it be? I don't know. We're aiming it that way, but the results will be bigger than even I can imagine. What's it going to be like when that person passes through their rites of passage to adulthood from a child? To adult, what is that going to look like? We have no idea. And we know exactly what it'll look like. It'll look like that person is assuming the gifts that only they can express in this society, which is exactly what it looks like when we pass through the ritual of I'm entering sobriety and I will bring my gifts into the world. I will bring back the boon, to use the hero's journey language, and bring it back and share it with my community. What will that look like? No idea. What does it look like? It looks exactly like you sharing your gifts that only you can share in only the way that you can share it and express it. And that looks like everybody else. At the same time, they are opposites, head and the heart, spirit and science, and they are one. They are part of one. Whether this one whole is a human, or whether this one whole is a society or our world. I hope this push-pull idea, this science versus spirit talk, has shed a little light for you, whether you're in recovery. Apply it to business, apply it to your life, apply it to your relationships. Absolutely. I guarantee you that if you bring this to your closest relationships, you're going to see, oh, I'm much more of the head. I'm much more of the scientific person. Or, huh, how interesting. I'm much more of the heart. And you'll probably flip-flop at different times in the same relationship, but be primarily one and/or the other. And then you might primarily be the other one in another close relationship. Or how you bring it to your relationship, maybe at home, to a partner. You're one way. And then when you go to work, you find yourself being the other, whether that's filling in a blank because nobody else is doing it at work. Nobody else is applying any structure here. Everybody's all got their woo-woo. Everybody wants to keep having brainstorming meetings. Well, we come up with a lot of ideas, but we got to get shit done, right? So why do I have to be that person there? I find this fascinating and I love it. And we don't need to impose ourselves in these oppositional camps all the time and plant our flags as science, logic, structure, imposition of discipline all the time. We do need then also to bring in the hearts. The healthy side of that is listening. And you can't be just listening all the time. You got to bring in the healthy side of the head, which is personal responsibility. I got to make that schedule. I have to do that schedule. I have to be the one bringing these gifts to my job, to my relationship, to my podcast. I hope this helps. Please, of course, send any questions, comments, concerns you have. I'd love to hear about them either personally through email. Thank you for those of you that do that. And feel free to leave them in the comments wherever you are getting this podcast, whether you're listening to it or going to where it is hosted on my Substack page. Visit me at randalllyons.com, the website, if you have any personal stuff you want to explore or look at, or contact me there or on the Substack page, randalllyons.substack.com. Anyway, that's where you'll find the Sober Shaman. I appreciate it. And until next time, blessings. Thanks for listening to the Sober Shaman podcast, where we explore ways to make the spiritual practical. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Send me any questions or comments you have. Check out the website, randalllyons.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, blessings.